this fall on Netflix. The future of America's democracy stands at a crossroads. While the nation's democratic foundation has weathered storms since its inception, the coming decades will test its resilience like never before. Advancements in technology, shifts in demographics, and the evolving global landscape will demand adaptability and innovation in our democratic institutions. To ensure the survival of America's democracy, it will require a commitment to the principles of equality, inclusivity, the rule of law, and the active engagement of its citizens in the democratic process. Will America survive another century or perish? America is Fallen, a Netflix original series starring the Democratic Party, the Grand Old Party, the Supreme Court, Black Lives Matter, the LGBTQIA community, and the MAGA movement. America Has Fallen.
Rated R for constant bickering, severe pessimism, and hopelessness.
Man, that is a series I do not want to watch. Are we literally witnessing the fall of America? Could it be that that fictitious trailer that we just played for you is actually in production before our very eyes? Let's talk about it today on Next 2.0. Hello and welcome to Next 2.0 on WQLN, brought to you by WQLN PBS NPR, produced by the Public's Voice Media. I'm your host, Marcus Atkinson, with guest voices, Mark Blunt and Chuck Camerata. If you want to know more about Next 2.0, go to Facebook, like the page, follow us on Instagram at Next 2.0 Erie, and there you can keep up with upcoming show promos, events, and clips about what's next for our communities and our democracy. Thank you for tuning in. We have a special guest with us today, Mr. Abdullah Washington. Abdullah, welcome to the show. America has fallen. And I got to tell you, I'm watching the news. I'm watching the decline. I don't want to say the fall because he's still sitting there. The decline of Clarence Thomas, you know, Mr. Non-Affirmative Action. And with everything that he's gone through to get where he's at, now all of his dirt is being uncovered. And suddenly his ability to govern and make good decisions has gone out the window when it comes to multi-million dollar vacations for him and his wife. I'm looking at the way everything is playing out with the a woman's right to choose thing. I'm looking at the trials from January 6th to see America scratching his head in terms of, can we figure out whether or not and how much of a crime it is that people stormed the Capitol and a police officer was killed? Can we figure out whether or not this formerly sitting president had any sort of role in said act? How immune is he? Can we figure out whether we should smack him on the wrist for threatening judges and threatening prosecutors on his social media feed? Or, you know, should we smack him on the wrist for inciting people to do negative things to people? Should we smack him on the wrist for saying, I just need X amount of votes, I can't even remember the exact number, one more than what I actually have? I'm watching how all of the different people from the MAGA movement are now stirring things up. I'm watching the Republican Party, although this person has all of these check marks on his list, all of these negative marks on his resume, he is still by far the front runner in this country, in this election. I'm looking at how things are coming apart at the seams when it comes to how minorities are treated. Now you see the rise of LGBTQIA and transgender and all of these different things. We are not on the same page. And when you factor in the rise of AI with all of this foolishness, I'm really like, where in the hell is this going? So with AI, you think about disinformation, I'm to the point where, and I'm not trying to be the ultimate pessimist, I've given up on actual information being disseminated from the airways because it is just too easy. Chuck, I can have a bot that looks just like you on video and I can watch you say the most hateful things and you can say, I didn't say it. Chuck, I watched the video. I was you. That was you. It looked like you. It sounded like you. We are at a point of no return. And so we posed the question, are we watching the fall of America? Before I dive in, I shared a report from, make sure I got this right, from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the People's Republic of China. I know some of you are probably saying, Marcus, why would you introduce Chinese propaganda to this conversation about the fall of America? Simply put, I don't think it's propaganda, man. I've read this report and I said to myself, there are way too many things in this report that I just in my gut agree with. And so we're always concerned about how does the other side see us? You know, we talked about in the past Russia's interference with the election and, you know, all of that. But Russia and China are always directly in our rearview mirror. And we talk about where we are as a country and how those two countries in particular see us, I think is very relevant in this conversation. Anyways, that's my soapbox. The fall of America. Gentlemen, welcome to the show today.
Good to be
here, man. Oh, all right, man. I was hoping that the subject matter wouldn't chase y'all away, man.
No, but it's when you said all that, the first thing came to my mind was a Mark Twain quote. My death has been exaggerated. This is nothing new with this country. Mm. Those that have heard me before, they know I'm a history buff. There's no time in this country's history that it wasn't facing what it faces today. Mm-hmm. If you want to say corruption, corruption was then. If you want to say division, division was then. If you want to say fear mongering was then. So this is just part of what a democracy is, because you have so many voices. Our tent is big. We're not a monolithic society. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've been in places where it's monolithic, Japan or something like this. This society has a very diverse, very inclusive society. That's the best way I could put it. Somebody said it's the worst, but it's the best thing we got going. Mm. And I believe that it's the best thing that we got going right now.
Mm. I understand that completely. You know, to go back to that, I'm going to read the preamble for this article. And it's only a couple of paragraphs, but this sets up the entire report. And I think that this, you know, give you an idea of where they're going with it. It says in this report, 2023, it came out, so it just came out this year. It says in 2022, the vicious cycle of democratic pretensions, dysfunctional politics, and a divided society continue in the United States. Problems such as money politics, identity politics, social rifts, and the gulf between rich and poor worsened. The maladies afflicting American democracy deeply inflicted the cells of U.S. politics and society and further revealed U.S. governance failure and institutional defects. Despite mounting problems at home, the U.S. continued to behave. This is what I love. The U.S. continued to behave with a sense of superiority, pointing fingers at others, usurping the role of a lecturer of democracy, and concoct and play up the false narrative of democracy versus authoritarianism. To serve the interests of none other than itself, the U.S. acted to split the world into two camps, is what it defined as democracies, non-democracies, it goes on. And so as Mark pointed out, we've always had these issues. But here's the thing about it is, and what I love about you saying that, we have always been duplicitous. From its inception. I mean, Dr. King stood on the Washington Monument and said, "Somewhere I read."
Yes.
Right? And he held America to the standard of, dude, I'm reading what you wrote. You go back to the founding, and I'm throwing up air quotes, you know, founding fathers, all men are created equal. I mean, so you're right. From the beginning, it's been one contradiction after the next. The question is it catching up to us?
It used to be called the Great Experiment. And yet it still is, because how do you fit all these people moving forward into an environment while respecting the rights of others and their opinions? Because there's very few societies like this that's not monolithic. Again, you have everybody here, and you have everybody that quote unquote has a podcast. They have their media, they have their Facebook pages and people that want to be heard. And you have a government that says, or you have a constitution that says that you have a freedom of speech, and you mix all that together. I don't know if you could do this in that country that you just read from. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could do this in China without being censored, mm-hmm. but I do know we're doing this right now here. So that's the strongest indictment that I could make about that.
And they would argue that their society has more stability because of it.
Maybe.
And not that I agree with that, but that's the argument.
Maybe they do. So maybe things are less messy there than they are here, because democracy, life is messy, democracy is messy. So let's not dismiss the idea that this is propaganda from the Chinese, because mm-hmm. they're trying to make their system look good. And if you read the whole report, there are parts of it where they're trying to rationalize the actual authoritarianism of that society.
Absolutely.
So you got to take what they say with a grain of salt. Also, though, they say some things that are really pertinent and true. And those are the things that we should focus on.
Yeah.
Their critique of American democracy as it stands right now and what's going on with us is pretty pertinent to our situation going forward. So we want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Well, so one of the things that stood out to me was they're trying to make a specific case to people who are close in their sphere with respect to the South China Sea when they make a point out to Indonesia about the virtues of the Chinese system. You know, Muslims around the world understand that China is doing something particularly egregious and terrible to the Uyghur population in China. So I just find it very tactical how they choose to bring up these issues. And I understand that they're trying to make a point, a blanket message to essentially the UN audience, which is the rest of the world. But, you know, as they make these points to different groups, it's clear that they're trying to make up for other things without mentioning them. And I think that's is a perfect strategy for a message for that entire state. But where it fails is, you know, the more aware you are of the situation, the more you can poke holes in their particular arguments, especially with the genocide against the Uyghurs. It's very clear to that group of people that I know there mm-hmm. know about that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's kind of like pointing a finger and three fingers pointing at yourself in many respects, right? But I do think it's important that we do, as you guys mentioned, look at what's true in it and contemplate a little bit how obvious that is. Obviously, if I'm an authoritarian state and I'm focusing on the appearance of the nation, I can see, you know, the appearance of hypocrisy in other nations and call that out. But I think all that we've been discussing about what we can do in America and our rights, the real issue is the amount of power, the economic power this nation has compared to other nations. They could not necessarily have these same things. So when you look at countries that don't have the level of economic power the United States has, certainly as Mao Zedong is the one who invented the term third world. Mm. So, you know, they tend to exercise political power through the gun on the local level. Whereas in countries like the United States and in countries throughout Europe, you know, our countries don't have the same license to enforce it so directly. Obviously, there are some vast exceptions, mm-hmm. but generally, you know, people have rights and how dare you, or you were supposed to say this, and you know, but in countries where they don't have that same level of economic power, it is more, the way power is expressed is more direct and shocking to us, right? Because the policeman, he's got a gun, he's right there, and if you don't do what the local sheriff says, that's it, you know? So the way power is exercised is different based on the economic development of a specific country or another. And because America is so powerful, our government does things in our names all the time that we don't even know about, that we we're afforded the luxury of not knowing about on a day-to-day basis, right? Yeah. It's just so this is an important document, but it's just the beginning of a conversation, so I'm glad that we're here.
Absolutely. It's a jump off. You know, when I go out of the country, you know, I get so often, you know, I was at one particular place and there were people from literally all over the globe. And that was the way I started this show, was like the way people were approaching me when they found that we're from America. What the hell is going on over there, man?
Right, right, right.
Like this thing is, and so when you look at all that's going on in our country, what part of it concerns you in terms of, because when I say personally, man, are we watching the fall of America? This isn't something I'm saying just for a salacious, you know, show title. I'm genuinely asking myself, are we watching the beginning of the end? You know, what concerns you guys when you look at the way things are playing out here?
Well, what concerns me is the diplomacy and the statesmanship of Washington and the rhetoric that's coming out of Washington, that one party, I think, thrives off of fear. And they're pumping fear. And I think that this conversation to me is like a byproduct of that, and then the other party kind of focuses on that fear and say, hey, they pumping fear, mm-hmm. and then therefore now we think we got chaos, when really this is the way that it has always been. If you think this is new, go to 1860 with Lincoln. If you think this is new, go to 1776 if you like. this has always been here. But now we hear it more, we're paying attention to it more. And then also, I believe it's some misinformation, because first, the very premise of what we're talking about, a democracy. First of all, this country is not a democracy. It is a constituted republic. It's under the Constitution. That's why you have the Electoral College or whatever. It's not a pure democracy, mm-hmm. so we have to understand that. And then the big underflow of that is we're in a system called capitalism. Mm-hmm. And that, my friend, is the first and foremost thing that is affecting our politics, which is affecting our democracy right there. Because then you get into things like gerrymandering and the things like that, where absolute power corrupts. So what do? I try to get as much power as I can get. Mm-hmm. And so when you get that, you have corruption and you have a power struggle. Mm-hmm. And I think people will do whatever it takes to get power, including Trump. If you hear the rhetoric that he's doing, I think he created a crowd. He incited a crowd, and now he can't pull it back. And he's doubling down on that same crowd.
Yeah, gerrymandering is an issue right now in Alabama. You know what I mean? That thing is alive and kicking everywhere you go. Talking about things at their tipping point, you know, we've mentioned on multiple occasions, you know, the obvious, the murder of George Floyd on national television. You know, that caused a ripple effect all throughout the world. But when you talk about breaking points, one of the groups that was not mentioned in that fictitious trailer was the Me Too movement. I mean, the Boys Club thing was normalized, right? Yes. How you look at a woman, how you talk to a woman, how you touch a woman, or whether or not you touch a woman, whether it's at the workplace or at church. It didn't matter for years, as you pointed out, Marcus, the way it's always been. And it tripped me out to sit back and watch like that system actually fall. Like to see Harvey Weinstein get locked up, mm-hmm. Bill Cosby get locked up. So the days of catcalling and retaliation because I you won't go out on a date with me at the job, those days are over. And so whether it's the come to Jesus with race, the come to Jesus with sexism, we're watching these little mainstays of societal actions fall apart. Mm-hmm.
And isn't I'm that saying the way it goes, though?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's so Mark's talking about history repeating itself, or at least reminding us that it's always been this way in democracy. Now you think about how things have changed in this society over the years and what causes change. So we had an era where the rich had all the wealth, the robber baron era. And in that era, there began to be some things happening under the surface. Mm. And pretty soon that ferment bubbled up. And the people said, nope, not gonna put up with that. And we had the labor movement, which made a huge difference in American society. And we developed a middle class that we never had before. And I see the same kind of thing happening now, where all of these groups are saying, you know what? We matter. Mm-hmm. And so you have the Me Too movement, and you have Black Lives Matter, and you have the LGBTQ community standing up and saying, we matter too. And it just kind of goes across the board. I'm sure I'm leaving out other groups that are kind of saying those kinds mm-hmm. of things. And when those folks come together, when they get serious about political action, this is one of Mark's things, we got to vote. We got to get young people mm-hmm. out there to the polls. We got to vote. That's when things change in this society. So at the same moment that there's this crisis that we're afraid, and I share your concerns, Marcus. I mean, it could go either way. Could have gone either way 100 years ago. It could have gone either way 150 years ago when we had the Civil War. So it's always at the point where we have to choose a road.
This is true.
But I think most Americans want to move towards something resembling America's dreams for itself. Mm. And even though we've never really lived out those ideals, Langston Hughes has a poem, Let America Be America Again. The thing about that was America was never America, but he was hearkening to a dream in the same way that MLK was. And so that's kind of what we need to do, remind folks of the dream, but also work our buns off to get people out there to fight for that dream. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a group now that people are pushing back against, if you're a transgendered person in this culture, if you're a black man in this culture, if you're a woman in this culture, mm-hmm. I mean, you cobble together all of those constituencies, you got a huge majority.
Really
so
do.
Let's go out there and tell people we matter, but we have to do it at the ballot box.
And you know, the thing about it is with all of those groups that have, and I agree with you, with all of those groups that have come out and said, we matter. And that's essentially what has happened in America. That has all given rise to this huge temper tantrum of white men that we see in society. This temper tantrum of, you know, as they said down in Charlotte, you will not replace us, right? And so that temper tantrum of white males gave birth to January 6th. Mm-hmm. And we see how America is like very tepid when I got to discipline that demographic, that's a little tricky. It's easier when it's everybody else. And so now as I look at that, Mark, you talked about people playing on fear or certain political parties playing on fear. With watching this demographic have one temper tantrum after the next, I'm like, all right, are you going to get that demographic in check? And that's where my pessimism comes in. Like, I don't know if I see it.
I just feel like, in my opinion, I'm acknowledge now that I'm a Democrat.
What?
I just don't feel, and I'm not all necessarily happy with my party, but it's the best choice that I can make right now. I'd say, you just mentioned the George Floyd situation or the January 6th situation. Let's go back to when a young man was hearing all this rhetoric and he walked inside a church and he killed some individuals. And these individuals that he murdered wanted to pray with him. And he murdered him anyway, based off of the rhetoric, based off of his perception of what someone had fed him. He went and murdered him. Now, let's look at what happened after that. What happened after that, Old Dixie came down. Confederate flags, the statues, we came to that breaking point. And then we were almost at a point where we're going to have this discussion about these advancement of blacks, of equality, inclusion, diversity, and all these. That event was kind of like wiped out. And then Trump had one of his quotes of, it's good on both sides. And he wouldn't take his side and denounce what had just happened to cause the situation.
He would not.
And that's what we're talking about. We're normalizing racism. Mm-hmm. We're normalizing these behaviors, and they're not normal because it goes against our country. It comes a time where this is not patriotic. And Malcolm once said, sometimes the media could flip you and it could have you thinking one way when it's really the other. Think about, let's go to Kaepernick. He was protesting, exercising his American right that we die for. They say the soldiers died for him to do that. In fact, a veteran told him how to do what he did. And people that was uninformed, uneducated, and manipulated felt that what he was doing was un-American when it was very American.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But this is how it's flipped.
Yeah.
Because all he wants is his rights and equality and inclusion. That's all he wanted. And that's what all these groups want. So we have to watch, I guess, what we wish for, what we write down on paper, because this is the fruition of it. And some people is pushing the narrative, because these things have happened, woke has happened. Because these things have happened, our society is going to hell. And these type of things, because these people have gotten their rights and they finally are able to speak. These things are coming underneath the carpet and they're coming in our face and we can't handle it. So, no, I don't think democracy is failing. In fact, I think it's worked. That's why we see what we see.
Interesting. Well, so point. that's the issue, though, is because there's a lot of money in racism. You know, there's a lot of money in division, right? And it's certainly from the aspect of not challenging those who have money. It's a worthwhile investment when you really, really look at it. I mean, if you go back in the day and look at all those, the place that the negative black image, Sambo, all that stuff held in the commercial markets way back in the day, they were using racism to sell everything just like people use sex to sell everything.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? The mm-hmm. same, like, I am not exaggerating. If you take a look back at that old time stuff, you wouldn't see a bunch of naked women. You would see a bunch of ridiculous looking black people mm-hmm. on everything. Mm-hmm. Anything that could be fashioned with some black person's body part allegedly as part of it, that was the commercial climate of that time. It was race that sold. And so now we supposedly have had this civil war and gone through. There's a lot of people who've been trying to rehabilitate the image of the South. There's a lot of people making money. Those people have never really gone away. And when they're threatened at a time like this with these different movements, mm-hmm. it's in their interest to keep that going. I mean, don't think that any of these corporations necessarily care. That's what kills me about it. There's all these people like woke this, woke that. Oh, why has it got to be woke? These corporations just don't want to be sued. They don't want to be vulnerable to lawsuits and whatnot.
It's always the bottom
line. So they just, it's just in the interest of protecting themselves, yeah. They've changed what's allowed in the media to some degree. I mean, not totally, but, you know, that's all it is. And the perception with people who feel threatened by all these changes is that, oh, Disney's doing this. So they're only reacting. They're only taking a protective stance. They don't want to be seen as someone who's excluding people or won't hire people for this or that or contributing to racism or genderism, whatever it is. And it's just really remarkable because, you know, this whole suggestion that somehow markets are more favorable to minorities is insane, you know, but people are conditioned to respond to moneyed interests. And rather than the people who feel they're losing something, looking at the corporate structure and going, well, really, this agenda, this quote-unquote agenda, is really being driven by people with money who traditionally have been on my apparent side of things, trying to further protect themselves while they make even more money. And especially, you know, instead of standing up against corporate interests like the tax rates and things like that, it's convenient to make your target be someone who are groups of people who don't have economic and political power, or maybe just barely have a democratic they're organizing in levels finally that can actually give them some kind of power. It's easier to go after. We all know bullies go after people they think are weak.
That's right.
But when the bully comes up against a group of people, that's a different story, and maybe that's what we need to be doing. I mean, think about Donald Trump, and how does this guy get to be the representative for poor Americans who are disenfranchised? How does this guy get to be that?
Please
explain that. So you have... Where is the narrative that makes it clear to the American people that the people who are holding them back, the people who are making life harder and more difficult for them in this country, are the rich people? Mm. And I hate to, you know, phrase it like that, because it's not like I don't like rich people, but the vested interest, the moneyed interest in this country, they want it to be about black people. They want it to be about LGBTQ mm-hmm. people. They want it to be, oh, those women are getting out of the place, out of place. Because that distracts. I have a friend who uses the phrase weapons of mass distraction. Mm. It's a great phrase. And that's what we have done. So the job of people like us, try to bring people to a place of awareness that we have a ridiculously stratified country when it comes to wealth. And money, the Citizens United legislation or decision. Money rules the country. Mm-hmm. And not just money, but people with money.
That's right.
So what are we, I don't know how you break through that when so many people who are not moneyed people have gotten behind this guy, Donald Trump.
This is one of the things that leads to my pessimism, because, you know, we talk about the middle class, the rise of the middle class. Now we are watching the disintegration of the middle class, right? So you've got, you know, technology taking over a lot of mainstream positions, and the middle class is getting smaller. The hands, the wealth being concentrated in the hand of a few is growing. We have watched the phrase centibillionaire be coined for the first time in history, right? That someone can actually be a centibillionaire, to be worth $100 billion, and that group is continually growing. And then when you look at, you know, from a political standpoint, things are tilted so far from one direction to the next. And I'm asking, with all of these things at play, we could talk about voting. Can voting reverse the effects of some of what we see playing out in front of us? Can we be pulled out of this abyss? I'm not being intentionally provocative, but I mean, can we pull ourselves out of this abyss?
It's just not voting. It's holding whoever is the elected officials accountable. It's education. It's in your every Sunday in your synagogues, or Saturday on your synagogues and your churches on Sunday, all hands on deck. It's not just politics, because it's also the corporate world, which is kind of separate from the two, if you ask me. But until you have the information, until you change an attitude, you have to change the culture, because people go to the polls, say like Obama, and you're electing. Then you don't do anything else. You leave it up to them. They can't do it by themselves. Mm-mm. All politics is local. I mean, what are you doing in your area? Let's look at Deion. Deion Sanders, coach of Colorado. People are tripping over themselves to go over there and support Deion while bypassing their local organization because they want to support something black or support what they want to see or whatever. Deion's story is not necessarily unique. You got people trying to help our youth right here. You got, but you can't support them because you know them. You got people doing everything Deion doing in all parts of these other countries where these celebrities are flying over these countries, these people, and going to landing in Colorado. Now, I'm not hating on Deion. All I'm saying is that's an example of when you want to support something, he shows you how you can. And we need to do that more locally. But no, I don't believe it's just about voting. No, I don't believe it's just about getting younger people. I think it's about getting the right people and some true leadership. And until you get those things, you'll keep getting the same thing. Because I want one thing else to be remembered. Trump never won a general election. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the narrative came. He got you figured like, hey, it was rigged because I didn't win. He didn't win the first one. Mm-mm. He did. In a democracy, if this is what this is about, he lost the general election the first time.
Yep.
He didn't beat Hillary on the vote. One man, one vote, if that's what democracy is. Right. He didn't win the second time. Then he said, that's a trick because how did I lose? Well, you lost the first time. Mm-hmm. Right. You lost the first time. So what we need to look at is an education of the voters, of our citizens, of our citizens, and be better citizens, I believe.
I want to go after the accountability thing now. I want to keep poking the bear because the pessimism, I mean, I'm hearing my brothers and they're kicking some good stuff. I'm still sitting here like, I don't know if I see it. You look at the role that church has played. Let's stick with 55. You see the role that the church has played, 45. The role that the church has played in all of that, in conservatism, and in the racism that's baked into it. It's interesting how, as that president rose, I know a lot of folk in the church world that I swore we were somewhat on the same page until that president hit. And it was like, ooh. And they catapulted him. And real quick, before you go there, then you look at the Supreme Court and the partisanship of that. And so Donald Trump does everything he can to support, because it led to votes, to support, you know, the pro-life, you know, dogma, right? He does that. He appoints a whole bunch of judges, and then he appoints Supreme Court judges, local judges, and then we come to find out, not that we didn't always know, the partisanship of even the Supreme Court has been laid bare. So when we talk about holding people accountable, I'm like, hold who accountable? Everybody has an agenda, even those that are making the decisions. Go ahead, brother.
Well, so whoever, you know, Donald Trump's team, this is from the standpoint of the media. They had the pulse of the nation the right way as far as their target demographic. Because if you remember, he was on WWF Wrestling speaking directly to that base. He did it over. He calculated himself in the media through his, you know, The Apprentice and WWF Wrestling to send a message directly to those people. So by the time he came on the national scene with the whole world, he was already... You know, there's the character called the heel, and that's what Donald Trump did. As terrible as this person is, you know what I'm saying? You know what his function is. So they trust that person. Mm-hmm. Even though they're bad and they're going to do foul stuff or whatever, they still have an affinity for this individual.
Yeah.
And that's the role that he slipped into in America. And he did a very good job. I'm saying, I mean, you know, he emotionally resonated his message with that particular group of people. And you got to remember, this country... Because it's political suicide to try to set up a draft. There's been basically 2% of the population that's been relied on for wars for the past several decades. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? This, like, think of all the people you know whose grandfather or great-grandfather fought for this country. And so these people have been paying a price. And the trauma that comes with that culturally, you know, is a certain, not just, I hate to say it this way because I don't mean entitlement in the way that everybody uses the term. But the whole concept of who's patriotic and who's not, that's what happens when you have that. When you look at the old systems of people talking about democracy, even in the Greek days, you know, Socrates was a war veteran. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's certain people that were compelled to fight who didn't have a real status in Greece because they had slavery there too. But there were people who reaped the benefits of fighting because they were in the middle or upper classes. And so their concept of who a real Greek was or a real patriot was molded by that too. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've done. all these people kicking the can down the road as politicians to be popular have set us up for this moment in history.
Thank you for that, because I'm going to that photo in my mind of Donald Trump and his wife at the time with the Clintons, because he was a Democrat first, mm-hmm. right? And I don't want to let the Democrats off the hook. Mark, you were saying when you first started that, you know, I'm a Democrat, not necessarily happy with my party. With all the Republicans have done to crash and burn their party over the last couple of years, and they are reaping what they've sown right now directly, because now they're trying to figure out, how in the hell do we get this dude out of here? You know, you let the Rottweiler into the kitchen, and now you're trying to swing the door open and hide for cover, and he won't leave. The Democrats haven't necessarily seized on this moment to say, we got some solutions. I don't want to let them off the hook here. You know, where are we at with that? It feels like more of the same. It feels like Burger King and McDonald's, the illusion of choice, right?
Yeah.
I think the conservatives have learned how to message better than, quote unquote, whatever a liberal used to be called progressive is. And they market it better. And they're preaching to their choir better than what we're preaching to our choir, mm-hmm. because our choir is very diverse. And we'll debate about words like defund the police. We have that under our umbrella. We have the same-sex marriage under our umbrella. We have all those things. And you can't please everybody, but you have to stand for something. Because this is what the question the Democrats is going to have to ask themselves. What do we stand for? Define it. They've called something liberal, and we don't even know what that is. I know I'm not liberal to the point of everything. Because I respect one's right doesn't make me liberal to things. Mm. But if you villainize me to the point, I might side with that group a little bit more, because the conservatives have done a great job of villainizing something. And it's simplified. It's like Fox News is the most simplest thing. And I hate even to call it news. I really hate to call it news. It's propaganda, and they've done a great job at what they do. I have to give them credit for it, for that, and mobilizing their people.
Weapon of mass instruction for that
there
one.
There you go.
That's what Rush Limbaugh used to call himself, and I'm just like, you know, love him or hate him. That's to his party. Rush was a weapon of mass instruction.
And one of the problems with it is not only have they done that, marketed and branded themselves well and their messaging strategy, but the opposite is true as well. So we talk about big moneyed interests, and that was one of the problems during the last presidential election, was because, quiet as it's kept, the people who do the most funding for the Democrats, as well as that same demographic of billionaires, and they decide who they're going to put their money. And so the whole primary system was compromised on the Democrat side because nobody wanted to put their wallet down on any of the people during that period.
Yep.
They were interviewing, what's the man's name? He was the governor,
Bloomberg,
yeah. They interviewed him and they said, what does it feel like to be the only billionaire in this, or to be one of the billionaires in this race? And he knew Donald Trump wasn't worth $1 billion back then, so he looked shocked on his face, and he was like as if to say, like, who's the other billionaire, right?
Yeah.
That was before everybody knew, you know, the financial issues that Trump had. And he decided to jump in that race himself because he knew he had the money to do it. But nobody else had the money until it got down to the wire and Biden said, okay, well, I'm getting in here for real. So because you have all these people who have the same interests, you know what I'm saying, of the other side, and the Republicans don't seem to be hurting them. So what interest do they have in putting some money behind somebody?
And if you dumb down a society, what type of democracy will you have?
This is true. Right.
Absolutely.
Because if the citizens are the engine of a democracy and you dumb them down, what do you get? And I think you get what you deserve, because what's getting ready to happen is this is the mess that we've inherited. Because we're afraid to say certain things. We're afraid to do certain things. And we're kicking cans down the road politically, morally. And this is a result of the dumbing down that I think that is happening. And we've allowed this. We could do better.
Goes back to my pessimism. You know, it used to be we made fun of Jerry Springer. Oh, you're a Jerry Springer type. Now it's Jerry Springer. It's Housewives. It's the Golden Bachelor, right. The Bachelorette, the Young Bachelor,
wait,
the Color Bachelor.
Well, you dissing my shows.
So
So you talk about the dumbing down of America. I mean, America is, it, and this sounds terrible, man. From a societal standpoint, I feel like we wear one big dunce cap, man. To go into a room and get a good conversation is now a standard that I struggle with.
Absolutely.
To meet. When I go places and I try to make conversation, I'm like, unless it's sports or some kind of foolishness, people struggle to even sit for 10 minutes and have a discussion.
So even people like us don't want to talk about it. So we sit there thinking, can I bring this up or not? Right. So I'm going to go back to the point about dumbing down. The great theologian, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who lived through the run-up to World War II in Germany, and was a young, dynamic pastor in that time. And Germany was the best educated culture society on the planet at that time. So we're not talking about, you know, a place where there's no education. He said in his writings, and this is after he was imprisoned by the Nazis, but he said in his writings, stupid, and this is the way he said it, stupid is more dangerous than malevolence. And so this is a brilliant theologian, courageous, stand for justice against the Nazis. And he looked at his society and said, the reason we're in this mess is because of stupid. And so the education stuff that you guys are talking about, really, really important. And it's hard because people don't listen. You ain't going to get people educated by listening to Fox News. So how do we get into their space?
Example, critical race theory.
Uh-oh.
People say they're against it, don't teach it. Well, in my mind, if you don't teach critical race theory,
come on.
How do you explain the 14th, 15th Amendment?
Come on.
How do you explain? Because that in itself acknowledges that this system was built on a supremacist point of view. Those people were left out. So just to acknowledge that, just to take certain things, like there's a show coming on Netflix about the Osage natives, where they inherited some oil fields and they were wealthy. And what happened when they got wealthier? Wealthier than the Saudi Arabians are today. Oklahoma made a law where you can't be wealthy unless you were white. And not only did it affect those natives, it affected a young African-American lady at the time to the point where she had to be adopted by a white family and she was later sent to Tuskegee. So these type of things, they happened. And you have to acknowledge redlining and things like these things and just acknowledging it.
So when one side says, we don't want that to be known, when one side's intentionally doing the dumbing down, I don't know what the answer is to this, but to your first point about a critical race theory, try asking people on the street what it is. They do not have a clue. So we all know that it's about systemic racism, but they don't know, even if you told them that, even if you talked about systemic racism, they wouldn't know what you're talking about. So there's so much education that has to be done.
That's the scary part.
And it is the scary part. And there's a whole cohort of Americans. And you can make generalizations, but I think the Republicans have a lot more of these folks than we do. There's a whole lot of Americans who don't want to know because also, that's scary.
We have to, I don't want to blame it on just the Republicans.
Yeah, I don't want to let them off the hook.
Because it at one time it was the Democrats too. We can't get into parties per se. I'm in it now just for the sake of conversation. We also have to look at our schools and our churches because our churches turned a blind eye to these things and they've made things to a point where you can't, your opinions on gays is based off the church, the majority of us. And your tolerance is based off of what the church has taught you. So, and then I look at it like tolerate. Let's think of that word, tolerate. Isn't it amazing that in our scripture, you don't have that word? It doesn't say tolerate one another. It doesn't say that. So why wouldn't the churches even not be offended by that? Tolerating an individual, a human being, for being who they are. And then you say you're supposed to love this person? And if I use the word love, that's not what the churches are even preaching in to say, okay, it's okay. They still using the word tolerate. Mm-hmm. And tolerate, that's not a good verb to use, I don't believe.
I mean, you look at the letter from Birmingham Jail. You read that. King was talking about the clergy, predominantly. Like you are... you are by your, what is it, sins of omission? Yeah. You refuse to go after this thing. Were it not for you being tacit and tepid in your reaction to this heinous thing called racism, we may be further ahead than what we are now. But you are the biggest problem in this equation because you represent, in theory, the voice of God. And these people go into your churches and they're made to feel better about their racism because you don't have the spiritual cojones.
There's so much to talk about there, man. I mean, that's me. That's my milieu, the white church, and the ridiculous number that 81% of white evangelicals voted for Trump in the 2016 election just blows my mind, because he's like the antithesis. He's like the Antichrist. He's the antithesis of Jesus. That aside, that's a wonderful forum for education, because even though the church has gotten smaller and smaller in this nation, there's probably still no hour of the week where more people are gathered together to hear something than on Sunday mornings, mm-hmm. Or worship services of various sorts. Mm-hmm. And we're not utilizing that. We just bring them in and we tell them, oh, Jesus died for your sins. And not to diminish that, but to say that that ain't where it ends. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the beginning of a long journey towards becoming. And Jesus, the focus, and this is why I want to have episodes on this. Oh, the yeah. focus of the teaching of Jesus is the kingdom of God, and he's saying, here's what it like, here's what it is, here's how you pursue it. And that's what God really wants. So if you're a church person, if you're a Christian, if you're a Jew, if you're a Hindu, there's the focus is on compassion and love, and that is absent from Sunday mornings.
And it goes back to my pessimism, because that demographic has been complicit in so many ways. I mean, all the way back to the papacy saying about slavery, this is cool, and people felt okay with it. You go back to the Henry VIII days, you needed, they wanted to get the Pope's take on divorce. I mean, were it not for the Pope giving Henry a pass, he wouldn't have had wife after wife. And so it's, they've set policy from the pulpit in so many ways, socially and morally. And that demographic has not just been complicit. They've been the engine behind a lot of what you see today. And so it's kind of a frustration. And I want to follow that up with, Abdullah, how you doing? Because you're the guest and we're just...
No, I mean, I'm liking what I'm hearing. That's just... I mean, the whole point of doing things like this is twofold, because you want to address the content, but you also want to address the audience. And so we're doing that. But I'd just like to say, when it comes to education, I have had to explain this a couple times over the past week. This keeps coming up. The state of Pennsylvania and the state of Ohio are have two of the worst public education funding systems in the entire country. Mm-hmm. And it's all predicated upon the idea of not allowing public school children to have equal access to levels of education. And so when we talk about ignorance, you know, this, we're looking at ourselves here. We are an exception. Pennsylvania is an exception. Ohio is an exception. You look at the politics, you look at the struggles that we have. So it's no surprise that we're northern states, but look at the outcomes that we have here. And so these are some of the things that are shaping the discussion and the level of involvement, political involvement that we're seeing. And it's an ongoing and continuous battle. And yes, it boils down to racism. And I don't think you're going to get whatever traction we're going to make with messaging or whatever is intimately tied up with the public educational system, because you need people. Benjamin Franklin was a big advocate for libraries and things like that. They had this whole idea in this system that they would kind of develop a system where the leaders were more like philosopher kings. You know, they were heavily influenced by this Greek idea of, like, you know, people who were well-rounded individuals and well-educated running things. But you can't have a democracy without actual education in a holistic sense. And so these issues are just as important today as they've been at any point in time, and but they're definitely affecting and impacting our future.
So talk about the role of technology in all of this. I mean, I feel like I can say with a certainty that technology has, and I swore it would have an opposite effect when it first landed. We are dumber with technology at our fingertips. We are more divided. Right. And here's the thing that's really interesting, and it's hard to explain. Technology allows us to be more connected than ever before, and yet more siloed than ever before at the same time.
So, and with that, it also holds up the image throughout all of this muck that it glorifies the 1% to everybody. That is the one consistent message of this technology, is that this is who you want to be.
Exactly.
So you're going to have a problem having a regular relationship with a regular person like you who lives in your area that does what you do, because you see this one individual out of thousands who's perfect, right? Those are our icons now. Yeah. And so it affects everything. And on top of that, America philosophically, our main contribution to the world philosophically and generally in the world of science has been pragmatism, which is this whole concept that if it works, that is valued over anything else. If it gives me the most immediate and best return I can get tomorrow or today, then that's, you know what I'm saying? Today, then that's more important than anything, regardless, damn the results.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? If I can make this money right now, then who cares that I'm burning a whole forest down? You know what I'm saying? And this mentality of pragmatism is perfect for artificial intelligence and all these other things. Hey, this will do my work right now. Now, when you go back and look at the legal arguments and stuff that this thing made up for me, it is worthless, you know, but I made 10,000, you know, pages, or I entertained this many people on my platform. And that's what you're seeing happening. The practical immediate need of the individual, it supersedes, you know, the long-term consequences.
I'm gonna flip this whole conversation on its ear. I mean, as we coast towards the finish line, what are you seeing that gives you hope? Is there something that you're seeing that says, you know what, I look at that and it makes me feel like we can be pulled out of this at some point? And for me, it is really, really rhetorical, because I couldn't answer that question.
The fact that Black Lives Matter, the way it was demonized, shows me that it was effective.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
The fact that woke has been now a bad word shows me that it was effective. The fact that you could look at Florida and how they're against now investing in quote-unquote woke companies, that means that the investments were happening. Diversity was brought to the main table now, and inclusion. And now I'm afraid that it might go the way of the EEOC, Equal Opportunity Movement. Mm-hmm. But for right now, those are the hopes that I see. And I see us as more connected because of the media. If you look at the George Floyd situations that happened in another state, and they had a national effect, you have more of a national feel now. We have a kinship across the country that we see. You had a romance that's going on now with HBCUs and things of that nature. The LGBTQ advancements that have been made. I mean, a lot of people look at the things we don't do. I'm looking at the things that have happened and the response to it. The fact that we're saying democracy, or some people are seeing as failing, that's really the power structure that's saying we've taken it too far. And I don't know if we're taking it too far or far enough yet to those folks. Right. Until I see equality across the board, until I'm going to use King's thing, and I'm not going to weaponize it how they're using it, until we could go by the content of our character. And I know we're not there yet, so I don't want to use it to abolish certain things that help us get there. And I think they're using it to abolish things that get us there. And so I see hope in that we're still fighting. That's where I see hope.
Mm. You said the system, you know, is assuming the posture of we're taking it too far, and I agree with that. And one of my fears deep down inside, watch these movies, you know, like The Hunger Games and all of that, I'm thinking, am I the crazy one? Does it feel like we are not far off from something like this? What is ultimately going to be the reaction of the system when the system keeps saying, you're taking it too far, you're taking it too far. We matter, you're taking it too far. You're not allowed to touch me like that, you're taking it too far. Hey, you said that my race was just as equal as yours, you're taking it too far. People aren't going to shut up, that much I believe. And so I'm asking, so what does the system do that's saying, y'all going too far with this? But the kids, it's like the kids say it again. The kid says it again in front of company. What you going to do?
So we have to go past just talking, because that's kind of where they have, not us personally, but as a community in this country, there has to be action. And when you consider the situation with the environment and the infrastructure problems in America, I believe there's a real hope for a labor movement that actually does something and means something. And hopefully we'll see that more and more materialize. And some of these issues with wages and everything like that would actually have to change. There's a lot. We always joke about the weather here in Erie because we're like the prime beneficiaries across the whole country. But when you look at the coastal areas and whatnot, they're going to need trillions of dollars of investment and development, infrastructure, and everything. If this country is going to keep chugging along as it is, that's going to have to happen. So a lot of these issues between the rich and the poor are part and parcel of that. How do you get people to do the necessary work? What are you going to have to pay them, et cetera? We're going to see that develop. So I'm hopeful about that. It's just, do our young people today understand that there's an opportunity? How do they step forth? And how do we change policies to help that happen for the betterment of this country before it just all gets blown away in dust? Because America doesn't have, there's nothing in any holy book or anything anywhere that says America has to be the main country
that
in the world.
That is so true. Amen. That is so true. And when it comes to wages, I mean, we've watched the unionization of even Amazon employees in some places, and so we've watched minimum wage raise because people were just, especially after the pandemic, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks for the job. And now people say, well, nobody wants to work. But I think everyday people are starting to understand their value more. Like, I'm giving you 8 to 10 hours of my existence, and this is what you give me back for. And so if I was on the part interruption, or what's the show with Max with the points, I'd give you a couple of points for that one, Abdullah, because that does give me a little bit of hope seeing everyday people fight back like that. Man, it gives me a little bit of hope. But the pessimism continues.
My pessimism comes from looking at how many issues there are to deal with. So we got to deal with education. We got to deal with climate change. And a lot of these come down to education. But we got to deal with xenophobia. We got to deal with the targeting of black men, gays, transgender people. We got all of these issues out there that are impinging on us. And people will say, I feel like that's just an overwhelming amount of stuff to fix. So on one level, that's where I get depressed and discouraged. On another level, my 22-year-old granddaughter says, you're going to be dead before long. We care about these things. And so she's part of organizing and moving things in a healthier direction. And people like her have to become so angry and radicalized that they push hard. And then the question becomes, are we in the business of reforming, or are we in the business of revolting? Mm-hmm. And I think the answer to that question is up in the air at this point. Will we have a revolt, a revolution, a civil war, or will we get the fact that we can reform this system so that it's better for everybody? I don't know the answer to that, and so I live with fear, but I also try to push people towards doing the right thing in building the kingdom of God or the beloved community. And this, what we're doing right here, gives me some hope.
And one more thing to show you that it's working, Marcus.
Yeah.
The very fact that we're here talking today, the very fact, I'm going to pump your, we don't do this enough, I'm going to pump your organization, the East Side Renaissance Inc. We never had that before. I got a charter school, or I'm associated with one, Robert Benjamin Wiley, started by African Americans. We still exist, 20 years old. So we have wins. And why I say that's important, because if there's young people here, we like to mimic each other and we like to see. But there are wins to look at. There are examples that say, in spite of, we can still do it and accomplish some things. And I think we've done those things. And I don't think we talk about that enough.
Mm-hmm. If I had my little ticker mark, I would be ticking you a whole bunch of points right now.
I don't know if any of you are sports fans, I'm assuming. But I'm a Pirate fan. I grew up in Pittsburgh. The Pirates stink. They have stunk for years. And so you listen to commentary, and I have a cousin who was an editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and close with the sports writers, and they're like, oh man, it's never going anywhere. But we've had some wins along the way. And this year, we have some wins, even though we're going to finish with a losing record. We have some wins. We're trending in the right direction, and people need to get behind that. We do have wins. And probably we have more wins than we know, because that stuff doesn't hit the media nearly. I mean, like, I didn't know about Brandon Wiley stuff.
Points for Chuck.
That's what I was going for, points.
Or is it not? Because that's very, very true. That's very true. It's something that I actually say in my own personal philosophy, is that the people that you impact most oftentimes you'll never meet these people. You'll go to, somebody's telling a story about each one of us right now. And man, Abdullah did this. And when I saw him do this, and when I heard him do that, I said, that was my call to change. And you'll never even know that that's how that person feels. So you're absolutely right. There's wins out there that we don't even know about. You know, Abdullah, we'll give you the last word. Man, what do you feel right now? Where's your hope lie here?
In Erie or overall?
Overall, I mean, man, overall, with humanity, like I said, man.
This labor movement, hopefully it really becomes something that picks up with the ball that was dropped probably in the early to mid-70s. I know for myself, I'm working with the Erie County Human Relations Board, and that's something a lot of people don't know about. Just because you don't think you can afford a lawyer, right? There's not necessarily no way to go. There's people who will help you if you're being discriminated against. But we're finding that education is a big part of it. A lot of people don't even really understand what discrimination is, you know? And it's because we're so disengaged from educational processes. You know, a lot of people, they don't know what rhetoric is versus, you know, versus logic even, because of the dumbing down that we've experienced. But there are avenues that you can turn to. There are plenty of people out there can help. To your point, Mr. Blunt, you know, there's people out here doing everything every day. They want to help the youth, you know, and people just, they either don't want to go to them because they imagine they know them too well, or, you know, the opportunities abound here.
Yeah.
And that's my message to the whole, you know, to young people everywhere, is that you have more opportunities now than many of us on this microphone had coming up, you know. It's just looking. It's just being inspired enough to give it an extra shot. I told somebody the other day, I asked him, I said, well, why do you think all these churches, these religious institutions around the world have dragons and gargoyles outside of them?
Yeah.
You know, the reason why, you know, a lot of people you approach for opportunities, they might seem a little rough or intimidating because there's something of value on the inside. And if you don't know anything about that religious community, you know what I'm saying? It's to tell people, leave us alone. You know, if you want to come and be a part of fellowship and learn what we have here, great. But that's on you to qualify yourself to get close and learn what we have to offer.
Yeah, I lied. I said that I was going to give him the last word. But, you know, I'm thinking about just this overall conversation. I have a 10-year-old son, right? Which is a hat trick for a 53-year-old. But I digress. I had a 10-year-old son, and I had a discussion with a relative about some of my conversations with said 10-year-old son. And I mentioned, he asked me, what kind of age-appropriate discussions do you have with your son? Now, he's got an older brother that's 21 years older than he is, right? I said, the age-appropriate conversations I had with my oldest son compared to this one, that gap has shortened dramatically. Why? Because the youngest is exposed to so much. There's certain things with the oldest that I said, I'll touch that when he's at such and such an age. Now, you don't have a choice because of the environment. Why am I saying that? Mark said something, and you played on it, Abdullah, about getting involved, and there are people out there that are doing what they have to do for community and for society, and you touched on it as well, Chuck, and maybe that's the answer to my pessimism when it's all said and done. Is that we're at a time right now where it used to be, you know what, I don't really get myself involved with community. I don't get involved with politics. I'm not really involved with the kids. You know, I pay my taxes and I call it at that. We can't afford for that type of citizenship anymore, man.
Right.
You got to find something that drives you.
Grab onto something.
And get your butt into the fight, man. Yeah. Just going to the bowling league and poker night ain't going to get it no more, man. You have to be in the fight, because if we're going to have hope, it literally is all hands on deck at this moment in history. Yep. That's where this thing lies, man. Listen, I'm Marcus Atkinson. I want to appreciate, show my appreciation for my regular voices, Chuck Camerano and Mark Blunt, and for our special guests, Abdullah Washington today. That's it for our show. Tune in next month for more discussion and analysis with local and national guests. You can listen to our show on 91.3 FM every fourth Sunday at 4 p.m., or you can listen every Friday on any of your favorite podcast networks or stations around the 4 p.m. mark. I'm your host, Marcus Atkinson, for WQLN NPR, and for next, we will see you next time.